hi there, all our real sharks.
Well, hello.
You're here. He has arrived. Hooray!
It is your humble host and narrator, Rob, with his three droogs, which is Donna, Steve, and Luke.
Hello.
And if you can't tell on this special Let's Talk About, we're going to be talking about 1971's Clockwork Orange, done by the one and only director Stanley Kubrick. So let's just go around the table, first of all, and start off with what we think about Clockwork Orange as a whole. So, Steve, what do you think about Clockwork Orange?
A undeniable classic within films. It's a very important film.
Okay. Luke, what do you think about Clockwork Orange, like as a note, quick note?
Its legacy has brought out the best and worst of film fans.
Okay. I actually kind of agree with that. Donna?
I liked it. I think it did good for its time that it came out and still now. Like, I'd never seen it, and you guys had me watch it, and I actually enjoyed it.
Okay.
Okay.
I love this movie. I actually agree with Steve and Luke. I think it is an undeniable classic. I think it is arguably one of the top probably 50 greatest movies of all time. You know, definitely a movie you have to see before you die. One of the best dystopian thriller psychological films that will ever exist. Yeah. But I also agree with Luke, too. It has created some fanatical, zealous fans that some of them don't know what they're talking about.
It has that same, it's the same, you can kind of draw a through line between this and then Fight Club and The Dark Knight and Wolf of Wall Street of that, or and then also American Psycho of fandoms that kind of like draw too close to the point of the main character, and they kind of don't understand, like, and they basically, it's the whole idea of missing the point, which that's its own, which is its own conversation itself, because technically if you watch a film and you take something from it, you're not wrong. It's the filmmaker's fault that you got the wrong message, if anything. But yeah, it's an extremely edgy film. It's definitely, like, even by today's standards, it's still kind of like graphic. It's definitely not.
It was banned in England for a while.
And you know, you can kind of see why. Not that I support any sort of banning, but it's like, you can kind of see why people would be, like, weirdly upset about this movie. It's an upsetting film, even by today's standards. Perhaps
it does trigger people.
It is, because it is built around an idea of, like, the attempt of rehabilitating a disgusting human being. Mm-hmm. And what the measure of that really is. And it's also very cynical in its ultimate message, because it ultimately ends on a quite unsettling note. But it's well made, and it's also weird in its sense that it is technically a sci-fi movie, but it has very little that can be construed as sci-fi.
Right. And that's because it was primarily shot in existing locations actually made it. Also, I want to just point out Malcolm McDowell was Stanley Kubrick's one and only choice for Alex. And I actually read the book in a accordance to get ready for this special. And I have to say, I was insanely impressed, because the screenplay does closely mirror the book.
Why don't we also do, like, a quick synopsis? Because it's funny, because everybody kind of is reminded of, like, the first scenes with the droogs in their weird clothing. But that is a extremely small part of the movie. That's only in the first part. The rest of the movie, if it's one of those movies, I'm trying to think. It's a lot like, another Stanley Kubrick movie, 2001 A Space Odyssey, where everybody, like, remembers that first scene and then the end. But most people don't really think about, like, the middle stuff. They think about, like, the what are you doing, Dave? They think of the obelisk.
Right.
And obviously they're striking, and, you know, it's a credit to him. But most people don't even really talk about the middle stuff, i.e. the movie. So same thing with the Clockwork Orange. So why don't we talk a little bit about what the plot is?
The plot of the whole movie itself is, you know, you have Alex, who, you know, is undeniably a menacing droog. And for those who don't know what droogs are, they're basically gangsters. They're English gangsters. And he basically in English slang, they speak a very, very it's actually made up from the guy who wrote the book. He actually Burgers, who actually wrote the book. It's a made up language, but he actually based it off kind of Russian slang. And he actually got the idea originally for Clockwork Orange, the book, when he was sitting in a diner in Russia and some guys pressed their face up against the window and started like smearing their spit all along the exit of this restaurant. And that's basically how he came up with the idea for the droogs. But not just that, you have Alex, who basically, you know, they even talk about it in the film, he's a very smart individual, and it's not in the, it's in the book it's classical music, but in the movie it's just Beethoven. And Beethoven actually kind of plays a almost another character in this film itself. But Alex, as a character himself, basically is one hell of an asshole. I mean, he takes advantage of his parents. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't go to school. He even has like a truance officer who comes after him and, you know, tells him, you know, you got a very good brain. You know, you got good loving parents. You know, what is it? What is it about you? Is it some devil that crawls in you? Is it, you know, what is the problem? We're still studying. He even mentions this idea of the problem. And they're trying to stop crime at this point in time in England, or whatever you want to say is that this, you know, current atmosphere in the book, and they're trying to stop crime. And it's this idea that you can reform prisoners through psychological means rather than just, you know, the old optimum from just crime and punishment in the old, you know, bar and cell, or as they like to say, the bar-y place.
Yeah.
In this movie.
It's kind of an interesting way to do it, because when you look at it now, it's something that we almost rarely see in terms of our dystopian fiction. Because when I think of stuff like Terminator, when I think of like RoboCop, or even Upgrade, which is a great dystopian, we tend to view it from the perspective of like either the cops or the average people, where they're in, like they're surrounded by all this violence and terror. Clockwork Orange is like you are watching the thug's perspective. You are watching the guy who is like absolutely the hooligan, who is, I mean, he's the rapist. He's the murderer. He is the he is the character that RoboCop would murder within the first 10 minutes of the movie, remind us that he's doing a good job. Like, if it was another movie, Malcolm McDonald's character would be shot by Judge Dredd to remind us that he's the good guy and everything's fucked up.
You know, it's funny you mentioned 2001 too, because Stanley Kubrick, when he actually came off of 2001 when he did this film, and his idea primarily was to do this to do a low budget film.
Yeah,
and that was because 2001 went over budget. Yeah. He didn't. You know, the studios were basically on his ass about that. So he decided he would do a low budget film, which was this book. And this book actually wasn't actually his main project. It actually got passed along to him. And as he read it, you know, he said he just could not stop thinking of Malcolm McDowell as he was reading the book. But I think what Clockwork Orange represents, and I think what people really, really miss, and I think you were touching on this, Luke, is I hear a lot of people talk about when they talk about this film, is this idea of it's about some kind of 1984 rogue liberal government, about how liberalism and communism, whatever you want to put, you know, villain government in there, and how it runs wild on its people. And it's like, you've completely missed the point. And there are videos like that online that make this point across. It's like, not everything is such a message in a bottle like that, to where if you want to watch it, it's like, you know, I understand your disdain for Hollywood here,
but
it's not always like that.
Now, there is an argument to be made, and this is kind of where I'm going, because, like, I consider myself particularly more left-wing, but there is an argument to be made that this is about a liberal dystopia, just because of how they treat what's the character? What is his name? Is Alex, right?
Alex, yeah. Mm-hmm. Alex DeLa.
It's because it's like, it's not because I believe that a more conservative, a more reactionary dystopian, they would just kill him. They would just, you know, he'd be done.
Right.
This is the idea that, like, we are going to force a sense of reform on him. Because it's like, we want the idea of, like, prison reform. We want the idea of, like, rehabilitation. But it's like, we're going to do it in a way that is forced, that is creepy, that is weird.
Yeah.
It is like, it is that sense of, like, we are enlightened, liberally minded people in the modern age. And but yet see, we're going to in order to make sure that we get there, we're going to torture people. It's becoming good people.
Right. Yeah.
But so, see, there's even some parts in the script, though, that I disagree where that's what they're even going. There's even a part where they're in the prison and he's just like, you know, we need to get the prisoners out of here because we might be using these for political prisoners.
Yeah.
So it doesn't seem like it's a very liberal government. I just want to point that out from the script.
That's true.
But even
I think, but it is it's a totalitarian with a sense of what's the word with a sense of enlightenment, because it's not just we're gonna like oppress people, we're gonna force you to think it, well actually it's like you don't have an exact way that you're forced to, you know, it's either this way or that way. It's like when we get you, we're going to kind of like make you re-educated. We're gonna try to like.
We're going to it's like a reprogramming.
They treat it in ways of like, we treat it in ways of what we're doing now, we think about like in terms of prison reform, which of course, any sense of prison reform, if you look at it, is ridiculous. Or at least in America, it's like, when you say like, oh, it's reformatory, it's like, no, not even a little bit.
Close.
It's not even close.
And see, what's interesting about it too, is like the reason I even like, I go the whole, it's not really about the whole dystopian government, the liberalism, conservatism, any of that, is because even Malcolm McDowell in the commentary of Clockwork Orange talked about how the movie is ultimately about free choice.
And this is really the heart of the film, and this is what the film is about. The film is about freedom of choice. And freedom of choice being we are free to live a good life, a righteous life, or to be an immoral life. I mean, but that's our choice. It's not up to the state to choose for us. I mean, you may say, well, look at, how much of the population are in our prisons. You know, it's staggering. But the point is, you know, you get into a communist system or a fascist system, if you take away freedom of people to choose. And this is really what the whole crux of this film's about.
It's about ultimately the free choice of you as a person, whether you choose to be morally corrupt or morally good. And that's what Alex is. He is the ultimate contradiction to that. Like when he's reading that Bible, for example, anybody would think he was reading like some kind of passage. No, he's thinking about, you know, banging the maidens. He's thinking about whipping Jesus. He's like, I would be right there in the height of Roman fashion, just, you know, whipping along. He's ultimately a villain that you basically you feel for, because as I said, you know, he in the movie, he is he loves music. And what really makes you care for this character too is when he's actually going through that treatment and he starts screaming, it's a sin. And they're like, what's a sin? And he goes, using Ludwig van, he goes, he didn't do anything. He just wrote music.
He just wrote music.
And it's like, that's ultimately the side effect of this treatment that he's getting, is now he can't even
listen to classical music, which is hilarious, because that's another big thing, is like this evil, like,
it's
entity,
which
is
the
character of Alex kind of making it sort of like a comedy at some points. But the whole thing about like him being, I love classical music, but on the retrospect, because, all right, I'll tell you this, like when I first watched this when I was really, really young, I just thought it was all about extremisms, right?
Right, so did I.
Everything is all about extremes. He's extreme of obviously ultra violence, which was another McDowell's. Like he came up with that, right? That wasn't actually.
It's actually in the book. No, it's in the book.
It's in the book.
It just comes in later.
It comes in later.
It just, that speech is like narrowed down a little bit.
Right, right, yeah. So like he kind of like, he gives it to you raw, right? Like this is what I'm all about.
Yeah.
And the whole thing about the extremisms of, I also listen to classical music. Then the extremisms of
He's an intelligent villain. That's why it makes him different.
Well, it's one of those things. I mean, this is sort of the first time we've ever seen, just like Luke was saying, in films, we've seen a dastardly evil person not be the fourth, not only just be the forefront of a film like this, but looking into not exactly why he does the things he does, truly.
Right.
Like, he's narrating, I'm doing these things in the society that I'm living in. Kind of. When you boil it really down to it, I'm in this world, I'm doing it how I feel like I should. But that's why he was reading the Bible. When you're talking about that Bible thing, Rob. Yeah. Like, when I rewatched it, I was just like, yeah, I mean, he would.
Right? I think it's hilarious, honest with you. When I first saw it, I was like, oh, wow, what an evil person. But now when you're watching, I'm like, okay, that is hilarious.
But you get it, though, right? But
it's fun.
Like, I kind of agree with it on both of your watches, Rob. It's funny, but it's also like he would do that, right? What evil person would be sitting there reading, like, the anarchist Bible book or
and
something?
Thinking about whipping Bible. Jesus.
Yeah, like, he'd be doing the most evil, disgusting things of all time. But then when he goes to prison, which is another thing, it's his choice that he chooses to go, either take that prison sentence or subject himself to this rehabilitation, right? So that was his choice. It wasn't like they...
It's called.
Yeah.
More like experimental testing.
Yeah.
Which is funny. It's so... That's the thing where it's like what Luke was saying is this whole idealisms of this society of totalitarianism is so ridiculous because he himself is in this predicament where he's being tortured in the most vile, ridiculous way that there probably was more methods, like a better method to do it. But why would
the next step would probably be a lobotomy?
Yeah.
That's how it makes me feel.
Yeah. It's like in a lobotomy, it's some cases they don't even need your authority to do it.
No.
They just made the decision to do it. So it's kind of interesting about it. It challenges your perspectives on choice. It challenges your society. And I mean, obviously that was the thing, but then like, again, it also did the whole perspective for me when I first watched it of, on the whole, do you feel anything for this human being?
It does make you flip on the character, especially when he can't listen to music anymore.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like when he was screaming that out, it's like, you like, it's like that, Rob. Like, you like Beethoven, right? Like most people do. So does he, right? That doesn't make you a bad person for liking Beethoven because this evil person likes
it. So you can relate to that.
So you can relate to him on that. Does that make you a terrible human being to doing that? No, it doesn't. You're far from his perspective. But you also see through his eyes in this film what he was going through. And then, you know, obviously when he goes back to his gang and they just violently beat him.
You know, it's so funny that you love that because that's one of my favorite things about this film. I just want to speak for a minute too. Not only just about the cinematography of the film because it's incredible. Stanley Kubrick delivers some amazing cinematography in that film. I mean, the angles in which you see are incredible. Not just that, but kind of like Eyes Wide Shut, which he would do later, you see this idea of when the main character coming back all the way around and seeing all these people who he treated wrong and bad, like his gang. His gang is now the cops, which I want to, in the book, it's actually Billy Boy, not Georgie, who is one of the cops too in that part. But it's very close to the book too, which I really can't emphasize, which I was incredibly... you know, they always say when you read the book, the book's always better. I actually, when I read the book, I was like, wow, the book is just as good as the movie.
It's just as good. I mean, I feel like the book did some things where they fleshed out, but it's a film. Yeah. You know what I mean? You have to cut some corners here. But he didn't cut much.
I also want to point out, too, that Malcolm McDowell, when he did that the notorious Singing in the Rain part, the way it was done is, in the book, it's actually different. In the book, it's actually the Droogs break in, they do the raping and everything, but it's actually the guy who's doing the typing, the writer, he's actually writing Clockwork Orange. And the Droogs, Alex actually starts to read the book to him, and then he destroys it. Well, when they were doing it, Kubrick was like, you know, this is kind of boring. He's like, I don't want to lie. This part's kind of boring. And it's funny because Malcolm McDowell says this in the commentary. He goes, Malcolm, can you dance? And he goes, can I dance, Stanley? And he goes, doo-ba-doo. And he does the whole, I'm singing in the rain. After that was done, they went and bought the rights to Singing in the Rain and destroyed that song for a whole generation of people.
Yeah, truly.
And funny enough, too, when Malcolm McDowell met him later on, too, he refused to talk to him.
Who?
Give me just a moment. The guy,
Gene Kelly?
Gene Kelly, yes. When he met Gene Kelly. Yeah. Gene Kelly. It's not that Gene Kelly didn't like him. He just was, you know... He didn't really.
It's like iffy, like, you know, I'm a Showtime dude. Like, you kind of ruined my gig singing.
You ruined my vibe.
Yeah.
Some quick touch ups too. I want to note that Malcolm McDowell was injured when he did this film as well. The braces against his eyes actually scratched his cornea. The fast motion sex scene too took 28 minutes to shoot in that little span. And that's actually what gave the movie an X rating. Had the movie banned. The guy that you see working out, the guy they call Julian in the movie, that is actually David Powers. That is the Darth Vader. Yes, yeah. And one of the only times you get to see him outside of the costume.
So seeing naked women got it the X rated, but not the proper care didn't get it for the snake band? Where's the animal rights people there?
That's so funny. And that's funny that you mentioned the snake. The whole part, the reason Kubrick put the snake in the film was because Malcolm McDowell is scared of snakes.
Interesting. Yes. Okay.
I would have done it.
Wait, so you're saying that the Beethoven, like the sex scene with the two women that was like fast forward, that was the X rating? Yeah.
That was what got it X rated.
It wasn't the two separate.
And they said the reason why. The reason why was because. I'm not joking, my audience and my crew here. The reason why is because they said X-rated films would just speed up their movies now and be able to be called films. So X pornos would be able to be movies now if they just sped up the sex scenes. That is really what they thought at the time.
Weird politics. Yeah.
Yeah. Really weird politics. But I have to say, you know, Clockwork Orange 2 was actually one of Malcolm McDowell's, for a long time, he resented the film. He resented the film for a long time after it was done because all anyone ever wanted to talk about.
Sure.
Was when he did his other films that came out, they would immediately pivot to, hey, let's talk about Clockwork Orange. But after a while, you know, he even said in his commentaries and his Q&As that he ended up, you know, realizing that he was part of something that was incredible and he embraces it now. And he looks back on it and, you know, he's happy that he was, He got to work with Kubrick too. Funny stuff though, between him and Stanley Kubrick. They said, like, you know, Kubrick, everything was shot within 20 to 15 minutes of Stanley Kubrick's house because he doesn't like to travel far. So everything was like 20 minutes from his house. And they said Stanley Kubrick used to drive insanely slow to where he would actually stop traffic. So. Overall, I'm actually going to go on here and say I love this film, and I gave Clockwork Orange, and we don't normally do ratings on Let's Talk About, but I feel like we have to rate this film, because controversy and all, I give this film, honestly, a 9 out of 10. I want to hear what you guys rate it. Steve?
I think that's appropriate. I think this is a solid 9 out of 10. The performances from everybody was great. I just like how natural everything felt, obviously, and it's Stanley Kubrick prime. And the cinematography, I mean, I can't even pretty much put it into words. It's just something you must visually see if you care for films. All the wide shots, the close-ups.
The lighting. Doing.
The lighting is so... That's
perfect. The nudity.
The nudity, right. I know the Stanley Kubrick film. But yeah, I would say 9 out of 10, solid film.
Luke?
This is definitely a solid... 9 phallic weapons to kill an old lady with purple hair in her home out of 10.
With a dick.
I know, with a ceramic one, yeah.
It was funny. You know what was the weirdest thing? Is that, like, I mean, obviously, I guess murder, like, all crimes are different, but, like, I remember specifically when he, like, killed that old lady, he, like, hesitates. He, like, gets freaked out.
A little bit.
A little thing,
which,
right?
I'm like, he's done a lot of, but which I guess taking a life he's never done before. But, like, yeah, right. That's the one time it which I guess, like, is a sense that, like, he has a sense of empathy, you know what I mean? Where, like, he's just
That's the part of the movie that's interesting, whether he does like, or he doesn't.
He's not what you would call a sociopath. He's just, like, so emotionally unstable that he just commits horrible acts of, like, violence on people.
Right.
So maybe there... So, that's yeah, violence. Obviously but that's another issue of the movie. Like, was... There's a sense of, like, could Alex have really been reformed if they had just been on it, if they had done it earnestly?
Yeah.
Because he's not a sociopath. He cries when his parents kick him out. He feels true emotions.
He's actually still in high school, actually, in the book.
Yeah.
I think I wouldn't say sociopath, but maybe antisocial. And I've dealt with a lot of those that will play the pity me card. Feel sorry for me. I know I'm the one that messed up, and I'm going to show a little bit of emotion to get you to feel sorry for me.
That's actually what Joe said in the apartment to his parents. He goes, oh, sure, he's like that now, but that's all his scheme, and that's all his lying, his trickery.
I do think there is, I do think there is an inherently vulnerable side to Alex.
There is, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I do think that is maybe the biggest question, that could he have been reformed if this society wasn't completely fucked up? Which we'll never really know, because again, that's the question,
That's the question of the film. And that's, Luke, that's such a great observation that you picked up, because that was one of the biggest things I did see about the film. Is he's not a murderer. He's a murderer, obviously, but he didn't want to do it. He was obligated to do it because he was put in the situation he put himself in. His whole thing is the ultraviolence definition that I took from the film was he gets it. To like he like edges, you know what I mean? Like he's edging pretty much through the whole film with violence towards people, but never quite puts himself in a predicament like he did with this woman, which is to kill somebody. Like that goes a little too far for him. He needs to like get off on like doing the most heinous things possible.
And it's kind of the sense
The other ones have let him in. He's the only one that he had to break in. She's the only one that told him no.
Yes. Yeah.
So, Donna, what did you give the film out of 10?
You guys are not going to like me.
Yeah, go for
it. Give it a 7 out of 10.
Yeah, try it.
7 out of 10.
I was hoping for a 4 out of 10. Here's the thing.
No, I really did enjoy it.
Clockwork Orange deserves a 9 out of 10. It also deserves a 3 out of 10. That's kind of the swings of the movie.
For some people, yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Donna.
See, my thing is, and it may be my demented side, I want to know what he was watching. I want to know why they made him open his eyes. I want to know what he was seeing to make
him feel like violence.
I think he was watching like Nazis. Atrocities.
Well, it was really, honestly, I believe it was more the drug. Well, again, and the point is that like the point is that doesn't matter. It's like it is a dystopian version of brainwashing that they're trying to do to him. Like
it doesn't really,
the images don't necessarily matter.
Kubrick pointed that out in the film to Malcolm McDowell, because Malcolm McDowell actually says that to Kubrick. He's like, you know, you're showing me all these films, but they're not really that bad. And he goes, well, Malcolm, you can't scare the audience so much. He's like, we're already scaring them as it is. We can't put, like, because at first they wanted to show Holocaust videos.
Holocaust? Mm-hmm. Or, like, real, like, actual murder.
Real actual murder. Yeah, that's what I thought.
No, the point is not the images itself. It's the drug. Like, the point is, like, it's the process. The point is that they are torturing him into becoming a better person. That's the, that's the point.
And another thing is, like, what were in the eye drops? Like, were they just it was just
there to moisturize his eyes because, like, those were real. Those things really kept his eyes open.
I know. But for the movie, I'm saying, like, did they just put the eye drops in because they were doing experiments on it? Like, did they put LSD in it?
No, oh, that'd be funny, but
because they give him the drug before the procedure.
Yeah, that's what that was.
The ultimate goal, the point is the drug itself. Which is a very benign thing. It's like, and then it's supposed to like reinforce it with bad images. So I don't think the eye drops were literally just because they had to force his eyes open.
And there's like some like urban legend stuff, obviously, with every Stanley Kubrick film, right? So with this one is, I believe there's like the screams that Michael McDowell is doing is the actual real screams.
Yeah, those are really his screams.
Stanley Kubrick does this with a lot of his actors. He kind of like gets them into their, like, you know, he's crazy. He puts multiple takes of him in that chair with the thing on his eyes. And then, like, he would not call cut. Like, the scene would be over, but he wouldn't cut.
It's actually really two takes, Steve. Yeah. The part where he's first screaming, like, when he's sitting there originally where they're dropping it in his eyes, that's all one take. But then the part where he's actually going, you know, you can actually see it where his eyes are almost swollen the things. Up, yep. Mm-hmm. And his hair is actually longer because he had to go back and reshoot those parts at a close up. And that's where he's going, it's a sin, it's a sin. And, like, that part, he looks a little different because he had to do it a month later.
Yeah, yep. That's
but he hated that. And that was after it scratched his eyes.
That's Stanley Kubrick. Whatever he finds that you do not like as an actor, physically or mentally, that's something he will target and make you do multiple times.
Yeah.
So we hope you vidi this episode and make sure you listen, like, and subscribe to the Real Sharks podcast, wherever podcasts are found. And make sure you check out our Clockwork Orange t-shirts in the links below at our store at jackatoothstore.com. Thank you, everybody, and we will catch you on the flip side.